Blog Talk Radio. Good evening, good evening, good evening. It is October 1, 2019, 7 o'clock on the East Coast. You're listening to the Ankeny Experience. I'm your host, coming to you live from southeastern North Carolina. And today, in the immortal words of Ice Cube, today was a good day. We're going to be talking about the title of the show tonight is The Cold-Blooded Murder of Botham John. And when I was putting this together last week, they had just started the trial of this cop who went into this young man's apartment and shot him dead in his own apartment. And as a matter of fact, Sunday would have been his 28th birthday, I believe, 27th, 28th birthday. So I guess you could say, in a way, he got a birthday present because they found this police officer, ex-police officer, guilty of murder. And as I came on tonight, they're still trying to decide what the sentence is. And when I came on, they were still deliberating, so I don't know. I'll have to keep check. If I find out anything, I will be sure to pass it on. And it took me a while to get online tonight, saying there was something going on with the system. I have no idea, but I'm going to go ahead and go through with the show like I always do. If anything happens, I can always pick up from where, if anything happens, I can pick it up for next week. And speaking of next week, I finally got the crime stats for 2018, so I'll be presenting that next week in my annual show of crime in the United States. I've got the stats, and I haven't had a chance to go through them yet, but I'm going to go through them and put the show together, and we'll be doing that next week. I think that's the third annual show on crime, so I will be doing that next week. Speaking of crime, I think the last 2 or 3 weeks I've been talking about stuff relating to crime, so I'll give that to you next week. But tonight, we're going to talk about this crime that happened September the 6th of last year, when this off-duty Dallas cop goes into this young man's apartment and shoots him dead. Usually what I do with the clips, I usually have about 5 clips I'm going to play, and I've got 5 clips tonight, and they're different clips. To give you an idea of what happened, background on what this case was about. I actually got the clip, and I'm going to play the entire 911 call that she made while this young man lay down on the floor. And if you haven't heard this, you're going to hear this, and it is, you know, this chick was, and I kind of feel sorry for her in a way, and then in a way I don't, because according to what I heard in the video that I saw, how could you do this? How could you go in somebody else's apartment and kill them and then pretend it was an accident? This thing blows my mind. When I first heard about this last year, I'm like, you know, this bothered me. This bothered me big time because, you know, not only can black people not do stuff without worrying about being killed, now you can't even eat ice cream in your own apartment without worrying about being shot. You know, you can't go to Walmart and buy stuff without being killed by the cops. You can't play in a park with a toy gun without worrying about being killed by the cops. You can't have car trouble without worrying about being killed by the cops. You can't sell loose cigarettes on the corner without being killed by the cops. You can't have a gun permit in your pocket without being killed by the cops. You cannot be reaching for your wallet and not be killed by the cops. You cannot have a cell phone in your hand without being killed by the cops. And oh, by the way, all this stuff is done by black people being killed by the cops that you cannot do. And now we have, you can't eat ice cream in your own apartment without worrying about being killed by the cops. This just it's bugged the hell out of me. Because, you know, how can you go in somebody else's house not knowing that it's, you know, that it's not your house? If you don't see things in that apartment that you didn't buy, and I was talking to, you know, people about this before, every house has a smell. Every house has, it's not an odor, it's a scent. Every house smells different than everybody else's house. My house smells different than your house. Your house smells different than my house. My house smells different than the house across the street. My house smells different than the house next door. Everybody's house smells different. Everybody's house looks different. This young man had a red doormat in front of his door. She did not have a doormat in front of her door. So, I just don't understand how you can go in somebody else's house and then pretend that you thought it was your apartment because you were so tired that you thought it was your apartment, kill this man, and then think you're going to get away with it. I think the Dallas Police Department did a whole bunch of stuff behind the scenes to try to brush this up under the rug, pretend like it didn't happen. I think at one point they were trying to get the trial out of the county. You know, they're trying to do all kinds of stuff. And that just goes back to cops. Not all of them, but a lot of them are just trying to cover themselves whenever they do stupid shit. Pardon my French, but I mean, that's just the way it is. Whenever they do something dumb, they got to cover up and try to, you know. She had an Instagram page, and somebody found it before they got rid of it. And some of the stuff she had on there, come to find out that she was, I guess you could say she was anti-Obama. She was pro that blue line. She had one of those blue line flag things on her page. Thin blue line or whatever you call it. But she was sure enough pro-cop. And anybody that didn't think like her, you know, I guess they were thrown into the category of anti-cop, which I don't know why they like doing that. You know, we're not anti-cop, we're anti-stupid cop. We're also not having to worry about being killed by the cops for that, doing absolutely nothing. We're like that. And then come to find out when I was doing the research on this, I had no idea she was having an affair with her partner. They were texting each other. And they think that it may have had something to do with this also, that we'll get into in a few minutes. And he was married. She's not. But this whole thing is just, you know. And being I used to be a correction officer, and I used to also do hospital security. And being the correctional guard, we did not carry guns into prison, but we carried pepper spray and batons. And when I was doing the hospital security, when I got there, we carried pepper foam, handcuffs, and batons, the collapsible metal batons. And those things would break bones. They were kind of heavy. You know, you'd have to extend them out, and they could break bones. So they changed from those and went to tasers. So we had to do a whole lot of training on tasers and all this kind of stuff. And when I was with the, and I was a correction officer, and then we'd go out on different duties outside the prison, we used to carry 357s. back in those days, the Dirty Harry guns. We had those in our holsters and whatever, and we were always taught that once you pull those weapons out of their holsters, you probably better intend to use them. You know, what one of those things, you just take them out and play with them and look at them and all that kind of stuff. Only time you take them out is when you intend on using them. So she had a gun and a taser. So why would you just automatically just go for your gun instead of your taser? And why would you automatically just, you know, when you walk into this man's house, look around and say, hey, wait a minute, this is not my house. And I'm still not clear on how she got in the house, considering that the doors were electronic. And then I have an issue with, and I'm going to play this in a clip. I think this is the first clip on why one of the local TV channels there in Dallas would post up something about they found marijuana in this man's house. Who cares that this man had marijuana in his house? This is what America is coming, is turning into right about now. Every time you have a victim of some kind of crime like this, the media has to turn this into some kind of crap where all of a sudden the victim gets victimized again, because then, you know, this young man had a mugshot, which he didn't, that his mugshot would have been plastered all over the place. His record would have been plastered all over the place, even though he was killed. They always do this. Like every time somebody black gets killed by the cops, all of a sudden, you know, he did this in 1992. He got in trouble while a juvenile in 1982. I mean, they always bring this stuff up. This man had, you know, if he had pot in his house, who cares? It's his house. As long as he wasn't selling it. But they always try to smear the victim. Every time. And it's just unbelievable to me that they would, you know, it's all the time. They smear the victim every single time. And they try to smear him. Try to smear him. They found pot in his house. So what? He was shot dead, minding his own business, in his own house, probably in his drawers, eating his own ice cream, and she shot him. And all she had to do was just tell the truth about what happened. She just told the truth. But on the 911 call, when I play it in a minute, you will hear her whole conversation with the dispatcher and what she did. She did not try to help this man when she shot him. I think during the call, the dispatcher asked her, was she giving him CPR. You cannot give CPR with one hand. Unless you're an infant. She did not try to help this man. She's more worried about what was going to happen to her. So the clips I got, they were, like I said, they're different clips and everything. They give you some more information, unless you, you know, because when they were doing the trial, you know, most of the days they were like 7 hours, and, you know, I know it's hard for some people to, I know I couldn't sit down and listen to the whole thing. But the last clip is like, it's 22 minutes, but it's got like, from last week, it's got like all of her, you know, led up. I guess you could call it as a summary about what she did, what she said during the week, first week of the trial, and it's interesting. Like I said, it's I'm glad they got justice, because if this had gone the other way, there would have been riots all over this country. All over the country. And I think there are people out there, you know, that are probably, you know, saying, who cares, blah, blah, blah. Well, we care, because we're getting tired of getting shot in the street for nothing. You know, black and brown people have to go through this stuff every day. So we care, because we don't want to be killed for nothing. And, you know, I'm glad she got murder. I'm glad, you know, I'm not happy that she may end up with life, but, you know, you killed an innocent man. And we have to, this has got to stop. This has got to stop. As a matter of fact, I was reading a little bit today, I think it was last week, that a cop in New York was killed. And I think they were thinking that it was the guy that the cop was chasing had killed him. I believe it, come to find out that it was friendly fire that killed his cop. You know, and any time cops get killed in this country, you know, it's and I understand. I understand totally, you know, what the cops are going through. I'm not knocking that. But I'm just saying that there's just, you know, when a cop gets killed in this country, the cops act a certain way. But when the cops kill somebody else, they act a total different way. Sometimes I think they act like they just don't give a damn. You know, I think some of them just figure that it's just one dead a felon off the street or whatever. You know, they're gonna have to take a vacation or whatever, and then they'll end up with their job back. But the person that they shot, not so much. And I'm not knocking that. I mean, I'm not saying anything bad about it, but I just noticed that it's just, you know, there's just two different emotions whenever something like this happens. And I haven't heard a whole bunch of people that favor the cops say anything about this. Probably because they know that she was in the wrong. You know, because any other time, you know, because there are people in this country that will back cops no matter what they do. No matter what. Because when Eric Garner was killed, a lot of people, well, he shouldn't have been selling a loose cigarette. Well, does doing that get you killed in this country? And, you know, there are a lot of cops that don't need to be cops. They need to be doing something else. But I think a lot of times, a lot of these cops, they get the gun, they get the badge, and then they think they get all the power, and they can just pretty much, you know, they believe that they can do what they want to do or whatever. That's not the case. Your job is to serve and protect. Your job is not to kill people because you think they're doing something. You know, you have to follow the law. You have to catch these people, and then you let the jacked up justice system do the rest. You can't be, you know, judge, jury, and executioner just because you have a badge. Now, here's a guy that wasn't doing anything, you know, like Tamir Rice, wasn't doing anything, minding his own business, like, you know, like the young man in Walmart, minding his own business. And then all of a sudden you get shot. And then in the past, the cops will get 2 weeks vacation, and then either come back to the force because a prosecutor will not prosecute, or they'll leave and then they'll go somewhere else and get another job doing the same thing they've been doing. So I'm going to play this clip. And this is the clip about about why in the world would it matter if this young man had marijuana in his apartment, minding his business. But this is what the media does. It smears the victim. You know, why didn't they check to see if there was marijuana in her system? I wonder if they did that. I hadn't heard. I'm going to keep a lookout and see if they did that. They probably should have, because if you claim to be that sleepy, that tired, that you don't know where you live, you might need to be checked and see if you got anything in your system. There we go. Number one.
A search warrant describes more of the evidence collected at Botham John's apartment the day after he was shot and killed by an off-duty Dallas police officer. Hello, I'm Heather Hayes.
I'm Steve Eager. It's 9 o'clock. Among the items listed in the document are cartridge casings, a backpack with police equipment, and marijuana.
Welcome back to AM Joy. That report from a local Fox affiliate in Dallas, Texas, sparked outrage this week and allegations that the media and the police are trying to smear Botham Jean, the 26-year-old black man who was gunned down in his own apartment by an off-duty police officer. The Fox affiliate tweeted about the search warrant on the same day as his funeral. Last week, Jean, a 2016 college graduate who worked at Price Waterhouse Coopers and was a song leader at his local church, was shot and killed in his home by Dallas police officer Amber Geiger. According to the Dallas Morning News, Geiger told police that she mistook Jean's apartment for her own and that the door was ajar. Geiger says that when she entered, she saw a silhouette and thought she was being burglarized. She said she drew her gun, gave commands that Jean ignored, and then fired twice. But lots of people are raising questions about Geiger's story, which has shifted on some details. And according to an attorney for Jean's family, two people reported hearing knocking and a woman's voice saying, "Let me in," before the shooting. Geiger was arrested on manslaughter charges 3 days after she killed Jean and is now free on bail. But now Botham Jean's family wants to know why police seem to be treating him as if he were the culprit instead of the victim.
To have my son smeared in such a way, I think shows that they're persons who are really nasty, who are really dirty, and are going to cover up for the devil, Amber Geiger. And I want to find out whether the toxicology reports on Amber has been released, because she was the murderer.
Joining me now is Esley Merritt, attorney for the family of Botham Jean, not Jean. Sorry, apologize for my pronunciation. And so, Mr. Merritt, let's talk about this case. I think the thing that outraged people the most about the treatment of this young man after he was killed was the idea that his apartment was searched and the release of information of drugs being found in the apartment. Is that the normal course of business? And what is the family's comment on that?
It's not the normal course of business if you're investigating a non-police officer. If you're investigating a normal suspect and you believe they committed a crime as serious as murder, then the warrant you execute will produce evidence probative of that crime. The fact that the detective sought a warrant, and that's very important, it's not just what they found in the home or alleged to found in the home. They sought a warrant looking for evidence of drug paraphernalia or other criminal activity. That's what they went to a judge and asked for. And that evidence would not be probative of the crime that they were investigating at all. It could only serve one purpose, which would be to smear the image of Botham Jean.
And I think let's clear up a couple of other things. Did Mr. Jean know Ms. Geiger?
There's no evidence we have that he knew Ms. Geiger. We've talked extensively with his friends, with his family, who he was very close to. We checked phone records and contact information. We don't believe the two know each other at all.
Was there, to your knowledge, ever a noise complaint or any other interaction between the two of them in terms of complaints from Ms. Geiger about Mr. Jean?
We haven't been able to confirm the noise complaint. There was a noise complaint to his home that day. But after speaking with the office managers, they weren't able to nail down where the noise complaint came from. It may have originated from administration versus a resident.
Is it true that Ms. Geiger lived directly below Mr. Jean?
She did live directly below him. That part is true.
And is the family aware of whether her apartment had a doormat? Because his apartment had a bright red, very distinctive doormat.
Her apartment complex, her apartment door did not have a doormat. It certainly didn't have a red one, but there was no doormat there at all. There were other indicators, such as the floor number being displayed on the wall and the hallways being distinctly different, because each apartment complex generally had a doormat in front of it that would have distinguished her floor from his floor. We don't believe that she accidentally ended up in his apartment. His door wasn't coincidentally open on the day that she decided to accidentally walk into his apartment. We believe that much to be demonstratively false.
And the door being ajar or not ajar has been a tricky kind of thing to follow, because it seems that Ms. Geiger's story may have changed from the door was locked and her key wouldn't work to the door was ajar. To your knowledge, are the doors in that apartment complex capable of being left ajar without being propped open by something?
No, those are fire doors, and they slam shut. They have a sure slam on them. I've been in Mr. Jean's apartment. I've pulled it open slowly versus quickly. Those doors slam shut every time you hold them open. And in each version of her story, neither made sense. In the first version of the story, she was playing at the door. He swung it open and surprised him. The second version was really strange, the version captured by the Rangers, which says it was ajar, which it couldn't be. And then she used the force of her key to swing the door open. But as I described, those doors swing shut. They slam shut. They don't swing open.
And last question before I bring in the panel. To your knowledge, was Mr. Jean in the habit of leaving his apartment door unlocked?
No. Mr. Jean did not leave his door unlocked. He was a very meticulous accountant. He paid very close attention to detail, and his safety was a priority for him. He had a routine. He came into the door. He had a bowl right next to the door where he dropped his keys in. He wouldn't have been the type to leave it unlocked or ajar.
Would you mind, Mr. Mayor, just staying with us for a few minutes? I want to bring the panel in. Do you mind?
Please.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much. I'm Tiffany Cross, managing editor at the BTC, still with me. And joining us now is MSNBC media analyst Eric Deggans and the police chief of Ferguson, Missouri, Delrish Moth. And Tiffany, I know you had a question for Mr. Merritt.
Yeah, Mr. Merritt, I've read that investigators have downloaded the electronic data from the door locks. And I'm wondering what, if anything, will that reveal, and when do we expect to get the results?
Sure. That's going to be very important information. They've captured not only Mr. Jean's door, but also Ms. Geiger's door below. Those leave, every time the key is used successfully, they have electronic key. Every time that it's used successfully, it leaves electronic footprint. And so they should be able to know whether Amber Geiger accessed her apartment prior to accessing or entering Mr. Jean's apartment. They won't be able to tell if the door was left open, unfortunately, but if she in fact went to her apartment first, they will be able to capture that information.
I want to bring in Delrish Moss. And Delrish, thank you for being here. The police chief of Ferguson, Missouri, a longtime police officer, who worked in Miami, in the Miami area for a long time. So I know that you know of what you speak, sir. And so walk me through this. Is it normal after a police officer shoots someone, in general, not commenting on your particular police department in specifically, but in general, is it normal for police to search the home of the decedent, of the deceased person, to look for drugs?
Well, I think in this case, the reason for the search of the decedent's home is because that's where the actual shooting took place. One of the things you're going to do is go in and look for fruit of whatever you think might have led up to the shooting. This is a homicide investigation. And so on a homicide investigation, you will search the place where the actual shooting took place.
Is it normal to share the results of that search with the media?
Well, typically what happens is that you file an information with the clerk's office basically saying these are the things that we found. And a lot of journalists, I know, especially with the Miami Herald, they typically go to the clerk's office and they get that, which is public record. Now, actually going out and sharing it is not something that we normally do, but having it available where it's public record is the normal course of business.
And it does seem that Ms. Geiger, Delrish, has told a lot of different stories about, what happened that night. How quickly after a shooting are police officers typically required to file an actual official statement of what happened?
Well, one of the things that happens is this becomes a criminal investigation. And so just like the ordinary citizen, the police officer has the rights afforded by Miranda. So in some cases, if a police officer shoots and someone dies, they can't be forced to give a statement, because if they're forced to give that statement, then it's not admissible in court.
Let me go to Eric Deggans, because the other outrage this week, not only the fact that Mr. Jean's home was searched, that, you know, this information that drugs were found was released, it seemed to be a way of sort of making him look like he was some sort of suspect. He was in his own house. But the media's role in this, the fact that the Fox News affiliate tweeted that out, elicited a lot of reaction. What did you make of that this week, Eric?
Well, what's interesting to me about this, it does remind me a bit of what happened when Trayvon Martin was killed so many years ago in Florida, where I'm based. I have a book out called Race Baiter, where I talk about how race and media works. And so I took a hard look at how the Trayvon Martin case became a national media issue. And one of the things that happens is when you have a deadly event like this, where there are only two witnesses, the person who was killed and the person who killed them, there is this rush in the media to get any detail that people think may have some bearing on what happened, and a rush to report those details regardless of how it will impact the image of the victim or the image of the person who killed the person. And what we learned in Trayvon Martin is that it's very, there's this rush to sort of characterize who the victim is and try to see if that has some bearing on what happened in the situation, and often that can be unfair. If in the heat of the moment, you know, obviously this officer may not know who this person is or what their background was or anything like that, but there is a rush to get these details and put them out in the public space because the public is hungry for details about what may have happened, the background of the officer, and the background of the person who was killed.
Yeah.
And I do think as media outlets, we have to be more sensitive about what kind of details will come out and how they may affect how we see both the victim and the person who killed them.
Yeah, indeed. Let me play Dallas Mayor Mike Rawlings responding on Thursday to the release of information about Mr. Jean.
There are many in social media and new outlets that want to spread false innuendos. Bo was a great man, and I am disturbed today at those that try to besmirch his reputation. Shame on you. Stop it.
I think a lot of the emotion around the way that this was handled, Tiffany, is because this was a Fox outlet. It was
right.
A Fox News outlet.
Right, and that's very typical and very consistent with their playbook. And you talked a lot about this in the Trayvon Martin documentary that Eric was mentioning. And again, we see not only was Mr. Jean not accused of a crime, he wasn't arrested. He was just living in his home. And for people who constantly want to refute anything where you mention race, I would just ask that people question, if this were a white woman in her apartment and an off-duty black police officer entered her home and shot her, would it matter that there was marijuana in the apartment?
Right.
I don't think so. Or if this man had a gun on him and shot this woman, she's the interloper, she's the burglar,
she's the
intruder.
Right.
Right. Would people run and be his champion? I just don't know. And so, I do know. But I would just ask people to ask themselves that question. This is something consistent. This happens to be a story that got headlines, thankfully, but there are many other nameless, faceless people who suffer these type of, not just fatal incidents, but just incidents that come with such indignity for black and brown people in this country every day. And people are emboldened to act as these, you know, self-righteous law enforcement officers. Some people don't even carry a badge, and they don themselves, these people. So it's just heartbreaking, and my heart goes out to his mother, because I can't imagine what she's going through.
If I could point something out, I would note that a good thing about this situation is that we have experience now. We saw what happened with Trayvon Martin. We saw what happened with other police-involved shootings of young black men. And so when there are these attempts to put out details that may besmirch their character, there's a quick reaction. And I think the fact that we're having this discussion right now, days after this information was made public, and that there was an instant reaction in the community against the publication and dissemination of this detail, shows that people are aware of the dynamic and they're aware of what's going on and the struggle over the image of the victim and how that can impact how this person may be prosecuted. And so people are aware of what's going on to a degree that they weren't, I think, years ago. And that's a very good thing.
I want to push back on this idea of normalizing the behavior. It is not normal to search the home of the decedent, as has been indicated. especially given the facts of this case. She didn't say she was going in investigating a crime. So if she was performing a police function and going in to investigate a crime, then you search for evidence of that the crime took place. She said she believed that she was in her own apartment in both versions of her story. And so to ask for a warrant to look for evidence of a crime is clearly designed to attack the character of the decedent. It's not normal. It's not okay.
Yeah. To say nothing of the fact that she's saying that he refused a lawful order. I'm not sure you have to do that in your own home when a stranger is in there. I wasn't aware that you had to obey an order from a stranger in the dark and do whatever they say. It's a strange world we live in. Tiffany is going to stick around. S. Lee Merritt, thank you very much for your time. Eric Dagan, thank you. Del Rich Moss, thank you. Next.
Okay. So, let me get this off. Okay. So, yeah, that was another thing she said that she said when she was in there. She told him to, I think, put his hands up or something like that. And my thing is, you know, I had mentioned this before. If I'm in my own house, I don't have to put my hands up. You're in my house. You know, it's just, you know. There was, there were numbers on the outside of these doors. So why didn't she see the apartment number? Why didn't she see the doormat? Why didn't she see, I want to say these door keys, they had the electronic door keys. I want to say, you know, if it's green, it's unlocked, but if it's red, it doesn't lock. If you don't have the right thing, it spins and it's not red. So why didn't she see all this? Why didn't she notice that something didn't look right? That she saw this and didn't know it. You know, she should have just told the truth. She just covered all this stuff up. It just made no sense. Made no sense. Minding his own business. So this next clip is, which one is this one? Okay. Now this one is the entire, I think it's like 5 or 6 minutes. It's the entire 911 call. And there's a few bleeps here and there because they played it on TV. But it's the entire 911 call. And you're going to listen. If you hadn't heard this, you're going to hear this woman. She did not try to give this man any kind of help. You can't do CPR with one hand. You need both hands. And it's messed up. So here's the entire 911 call.
Live from South Victory, this is WFAA News.
The story in Dallas that's grabbed America's attention.
An innocent man minding his own business in his own home, shot and killed by a Dallas police officer.
The 4-year veteran of the police department was seen in video that's been circulating quite a bit, purportedly showing her in the moments after she shot Jean inside his house.
Come clean. Give me justice for my son. My son's life matters.
What do we want? Justice!
Arrested for manslaughter. This is the face of DPD officer Amber Geiger.
Geiger does not deserve to wear the badge.
Geiger remains on paid leave after shooting and killing 26-year-old Botham John in his own apartment.
This family cannot rest until justice is served. This offender is punished to the fullest extent of the law.
today, Amber Geiger was fired 18 days after the death of Botham Shaw.
What's his name?
Botham John.
What's his name?
Botham John.
What's
to know Botham was to love Botham.
I'm not satisfied that we have all the answers. And the number one answer that I want is, what happened?
We may never know everything that happened in that apartment, but tonight, for the first time, you're going to hear the 911 call from Amber Geiger. Good evening. I'm Chris Lawrence.
And I'm Cynthia Isaguirre. The Dallas Police Department refused to release that 911 tape, but our longtime police reporter, Tanya Iser, obtained a copy of it. And when you listen to that call, we believe it adds context.
And that's why we are airing the entire call. It lasts 5 minutes and 38 seconds.
Dallas 911. This is Carla. What's your emergency?
Hi, this is an off-duty officer. Can I get any emails? I'm in number.
Do you need police as well or just EMS?
Yes, I need both.
Okay, what's the address?
I'm at apartment number 1478. I'm in 1478.
And what's the address there?
It's 1210 South Lamar, 1478. Yeah. I'm an off-duty officer. I thought it was in my apartment, and I shot a guy thinking it was my apartment.
He shot someone?
Yes, I thought it was my apartment. I'm Oh, my God. I'm sorry.
Okay, and where are you at right now?
I'm in, what do you mean? I'm inside the apartment with him. Hey, come on.
What's your name?
I'm Amber Geiger.
Okay, we have help on the way.
I know, but I'm going to lose my job. I thought it was my apartment.
Okay, I understand.
Hey,
hold on. Okay, stay with me, okay?
I am. I need a new supervisor.
We have help.
Hey, bud. I thought it was my apartment.
I understand. We have help on the way.
Okay, we're in
South Lamar.
Hurry, please.
They're on their way.
I thought it was my apartment. I thought it was my apartment. I could have sworn I parked on the third floor.
Okay, I understand.
No. I thought it was my apartment. I thought it was my apartment.
And what's the gate code there?
I don't know.
You don't know? Okay.
I thought it was my apartment.
They're trying to get in there. We have an officer there. You don't know the gate code?
No. I thought it was my apartment.
Okay, and what floor are you in right now?
The fourth floor. Fourth. Hey, bud, they're coming. They're bud. I'm sorry, man.
Okay, where was he shot?
He's on the top left.
Okay, you're with Dallas PD, right?
Yes. Oh, my God. I'm done. I didn't mean to. I'm so sorry.
They're trying to get there to you, okay?
I know. Stay with me, bud. Oh,
They're almost there. They're already there. They're trying to get to you.
I thought it was my apartment. I thought it was my apartment. Holy f***. I thought it was my apartment. Oh, my God.
Okay, they're trying to get there to you. Do you hear them? Do you see them?
No. No. I how the f*** did I get out of it? How did I pick up these sports? I'm so tired. Hurry. Over here, over here.
Okay, go ahead and talk to
him. No, it's me. I'm off duty. I'm off duty. I thought they were in my apartment. I thought this was my floor.
Let me first start by saying it sounds like on the 911 call that help is not being administered. The arrest warrant does indeed say that Amber Geiger gave first aid to Botham Jean. Look, I've covered the Dallas Police Department for 17 years. This situation was something that I could never have imagined. It ignited a firestorm of conspiracy theories. One of the biggest was that they knew each other. They didn't. I was there the night that protesters took over the freeway and in protest to what had happened. This was a case that ignited anger, confusion, and race was front and center. Joining me now to talk about this, we've gotten this tape. We're taking a look at would the release of this tape had made a would it have made a difference? Should the city and police and prosecutors have released it? Joining me now is Kathy Lothorp. You've represented police officers, and Jasmine Crockett. You're a local civil rights attorney. Kathy, you've just listened to this. Should this tape have been released?
Considering the fact that this case was highly publicized, that the media, that the police departments, that the district attorney's office all had a chance to speak, it created a one-sided bias in my personal opinion, which can affect the jury pool that is presented when she has a chance to go to a jury trial. In that case, I think this should have been presented.
And Jasmine, what's your reaction after seeing this tape?
I was pretty overcome with emotion, to be perfectly honest. To hear, and I don't know if the audience could hear, but to actually hear what sounded like Botham taking his last breath, it was a very moving thing for me. It's sad. It's very sad. But you could see that the officer was very cognizant of the trouble that she was in for what she did.
Do you think it would have made a difference if it had been released?
You know, I honestly don't think it would have made a difference. I think that everybody is going to buckle down on whatever side they're going to buckle down on. I think that the times that we're living in are pretty racially charged times, in which we're consistently seeing minorities killed by law enforcement and nothing happening to law enforcement when they kill someone who is a minority. So I think that, unfortunately, due to the times, it probably wouldn't have made a difference. I think people are going to choose their sides whether they've heard this or not.
And Kathy, you represented police officers in trials. How do you think a jury will view this?
Well, I think that this is a very real recording of what was going on at the moment. Legally, we call that excited utterance, which is something that's normally admissible for that very reason. There wasn't a lot of time to react and to plan and scheme what she was going to tell everyone. This was very real. I think the jurors will see it's very real, and she's filled with concern, but she has compassion. She has all the emotions of what just happened and that her life was affected as a result. So I do think, I don't agree just what was just said, and if I might just say that real quickly, because I think that we right away are assuming this is race-based. When you hear this tape, you don't get that from it.
Okay. So I probably should have counted how many times she said she thought that was her apartment, because that's all she kept saying. You know, she didn't say anything about, I'm going to help you, you know, let me, you know, she didn't try to help this man. All she kept saying is, I thought it was my apartment. So, the next clip is about her affair with her partner that they think that might have had a little bit to do with this, because it's like she wasn't paying attention to what she was doing. But listen to this.
We're learning new details about the night a former Dallas police officer shot and killed her neighbor in his home as her murder trial continues. Amber Geiger claims she thought she was in her own apartment and Botham Jean was a burglar. Omar Villafranca is at the courthouse in Dallas. Omar, what did prosecutors reveal?
Good morning. Prosecutors say that at the time of the shooting, Amber Geiger was preoccupied, talking and texting with a partner who she was romantically involved with. And the jury got a preview of some of those sexually explicit messages.
And she shoots at him twice.
At the start of Amber Geiger's trial, prosecutors argued the former Dallas police officer missed several opportunities to avoid the deadly confrontation with her neighbor, 26-year-old Botham Jean.
And for her errors, for her omissions, Botham paid the ultimate price.
According to prosecutors, one of those errors was a romantic conversation Geiger was carrying on with her patrol partner. In the minutes before the shooting, Geiger and fellow officer Martin Rivera allegedly had a phone call and exchanged sexually explicit messages. Rivera took the witness stand Monday.
I really don't remember a whole lot else about the conversation.
Whatever is on her mind after that conversation has consumed her attention entirely.
In the opening statement, the defense dismissed the prosecution's argument that Geiger should have realized she was on the wrong floor.
In front of Botham's apartment is this extremely obvious bright red floor mat.
To say that she was aware there was a red doormat and knowingly ignored it because she wanted to go into 1478 and shoot this man is preposterous.
Jean was from St. Lucia. His parents arrived in Texas and spoke exclusively to us before the start of the trial. They say they want Geiger to be honest about what she was thinking before she shot and killed their son.
I just want a kind of a finality to all of this. The best thing she can do is to come clean.
The defense is arguing that Jean was approaching Geiger before she shot him, but the prosecution says he barely had any time to stand up. We're going to have to see what the physical evidence says. As for the jurors, they will be sequestered the whole trial. No cell phones, no computers, and this trial is expected to last about 2 weeks. Tony?
A lot of interesting new details there, Omar. Thank you very much.
Okay. So she was knocking boots with her partner. And that might have distracted her from where she was at and all that kind of stuff. Got a couple more clips to play for you. Matter of fact, they'll take us all the way out into the end of the program. So that kind of worked. Let me play this clip. And the last clip I'm going to play, it's not this one, it's going to be the next one after this. It's got her, like I said, it's got her whole week, her testimony, the entire week she was on trial. And they said in here that they were expecting it to last 2 weeks, but it didn't. It lasted a week. Today is Tuesday. It lasted a week and a day. So it didn't go the entire 2 weeks. So let's play this.
30 states, in addition to the District of Columbia, currently have laws that legalize marijuana in some way. Most of these states have legalized the drug for medicinal purposes, but at least 8 of these states and D.C. have legalized weed for recreational use, meaning that people can consume marijuana purely for enjoyment purposes. Earlier this year, Pew Research found that about 6 in 10 Americans say the use of marijuana should be legalized, reflecting a steady increase over the past decade. In April of last year, a Yahoo News and Marist College survey revealed that nearly 55 million Americans used marijuana at least once or twice in the past year. Close to 35 million are what the survey calls regular users, or people who use marijuana at least once or twice a month. Considering how widespread the drug's use is and how liberal people are in their ideology toward weed, it's fascinating to see how often it's used to smear people, especially after they've been the victim of a wrongful police shooting. News broke last week indicating that Dallas cop Amber Geiger was arrested and charged with manslaughter in the shooting death of a 26-year-old black man named Botham Shem Jean. Geiger told police that she mistook Jean's apartment for her own and thought he was a burglar when she saw his silhouette. She also claims that he ignored her verbal commands, so she opened fire, firing 2 shots, and killed him. Whether or not there was malicious intent in the shooting is a big debate, and it's certainly a big debate among those who are following the story. But whether it was a mistake or not, there's no question that the shooting led to a wrongful death. But as often is the case, that nuance doesn't really seem to matter to some. There's this ongoing trend of smearing victims of police shootings, and Fox 4, a local affiliate in North Texas, just provided the latest example. Fox 4 shared a tweet that included a story they published on their site with the headline indicating that marijuana was found in Jean's apartment after deadly shooting. Any reasonable person reading that would think that it automatically means that Jean was the pot user in the story, which shouldn't even matter, by the way. We'll get back to that in just a moment. But it needs to be called out that the tweet is deceptive and misleading, because if you dig just a tiny bit deeper, you'll find that there's no proof that the drug belonged to the victim in the first place.
The inventory return shows 2 fired cartridge casings, 1 laptop computer, a black backpack with police equipment and paperwork, an insulated lunchbox, 1 black ballistic vest with police markings, 10.4 grams of marijuana in Ziploc bags, 1 metal marijuana grinder, 2 keys, and 2 used packages of medical aid. Now, the document does not say where any of those items were located in the apartment or who they belong to.
Yeah, meaning that they could have belonged to Geiger. We don't know yet. Fox 4 eventually changed its misleading headline, but kept the misleading part. The new and improved version reads, quote, lawyers disgusted by the release of search warrant showing marijuana found in Botham Jean's apartment. Jesus Christ. I mean, that headline is still terrible. And while there's a note saying that the article has been updated, there's no mention of why or how, which is information that responsible journalists typically include. In a press conference responding to the smear tactics, Botham Jean's mother explained that she will not sit back and allow the investigative focus to shift from the shooter to the victim.
To have my son smeared in such a way, I think shows that they're persons who are really nasty, who are really dirty, and are going to cover up for the devil, Amber Geiger. I don't know my son to be involved in such. And I want to find out whether the toxicology reports on Amber has been released, because she was the murderer.
That's right.
I want to find out whether her apartment has been searched, whether her car has been searched. And also, on the Saturday when we spoke to the Texas Ranger, he was saying that there was no reason in his mind that she ought to have been locked up.
That's right.
Jean's mother brings up several good points. Based on Geiger's own admission, she was the one who mistakenly walked into the wrong apartment, allegedly believing it was her own. She had been living in the building for more than 2 months at that point. If her account is true, why did she make that fatal mistake? Sean King also notes that Geiger keeps changing her story, which adds quite a bit of credibility to witnesses who dispute her recollection of that night. The two conflicting stories are noted in two different warrants related to the case. According to the Fort Worth Star-Telegram, one version of events was outlined in an affidavit, which was written by Officer David Armstrong of the Texas Ranger Division. The content of that affidavit is based on what Geiger told him. In it, she says, quote, she inserted a unique door key with an electronic chip into the door keyhole. The door, which was slightly ajar prior to Geiger's arrival, finally opened under the force of the key insertion. When she opened the door, Geiger said she saw Jean in the dark apartment. She had encountered a burglar, which was described as a large silhouette across the room in her apartment. That's when Geiger drew her firearm and gave verbal commands that were ignored by Jean. Now, again, that's according to the affidavit. In it, she also says that she fired two shots, with one fatally hitting Jean. However, a search warrant tells a conflicting story, alleging that an off-duty Dallas police officer who was wearing a full Dallas police uniform was attempting to enter the apartment number 1478 with a set of keys. An unknown male inside the apartment confronted the officer at the door. A neighbor stated he heard an exchange of words immediately followed by at least two gunshots. Again, that's according to the search warrant. While the arrest warrant describes Jean as being across the room, the search warrant says that he confronted Geiger at the door. It's not our job to investigate Geiger and her decision to shoot an innocent man in his own home. That's what investigators should be doing, rather than attempting to smear Jean with marijuana that might not belong to him in the first place. And even if it does turn out that Jean was a marijuana user, why would that possibly justify this senseless killing? We have presidents who have admitted to their own pot use, and they've done it on the record. It's not indicative of criminality, and the cops know that. It's shameful to see these tactics used time and time again by the very justice system that's supposed to be keeping us safe.
Yep, that's right. They always try it, though. I'm going to play this last clip. It's about 22 minutes long. It's got her testimony for the whole week. I think it's important to hear what she said. I should have been better off. Nothing's going to happen. You know, I'm going to get off. I'm going to get to go home. Nope. Not this case. So like I said, this is a 22-minute clip, and this will take us up to the end of the show. Then I'll be back, and I'll close it out. And then we'll do it again next week.
Morally wrong,
I didn't want to hurt anybody, and I knew it wasn't going to go anywhere.
Did you remain close to Mark Rivera?
Yes, we did.
Did you continue these sexual flirtations, texts, photographs?
I did.
Talk to you a little bit about your routine when you were living at the Southside Court, okay? What time would you usually go to bed?
Around midnight.
And what was your work schedule? What days did you usually work?
I worked Monday through Friday, 8 to 4.
Okay. Did you also work a part-time job?
Yes, I did.
And when was that?
That was Sunday mornings, and it was at First Baptist Church, and that would be from 8 a.m. to 1 p.m.
Did you do that every Sunday?
Yes, sir.
All right. So what would be your usual day off then?
Just Saturday.
You could have had Sunday off, but you chose to work that extra job.
Yes, sir.
Your duties as a CRT officer in that team, did you sometimes work overtime?
Yes, we did.
And that wasn't unusual?
No, sir. I would leave and lock my door.
That was your normal routine?
Yes, sir.
Would you make sure the door was locked?
Yes, sir.
Did you ever have any trouble locking the door?
There were times when you do have trouble locking the door.
What type of trouble?
You would put the key in, and even though you would turn it, it wouldn't lock all the way. And you would have to pull the door and work with it to make it the deadbolt go into the key.
On that day when you left it, was it your normal routine to make sure that door was locked?
Yes, sir.
Was it locked then?
Yes, sir.
Do you leave your lights on or off?
I turn them off.
How about your TV? Do you leave that on or off?
Off.
Did y'all often have these types of conversations?
Yes, sir.
Would you usually call him or would he call you?
He would call me.
And what generally would he be doing when he called?
Usually he would just be leaving the gym or a store.
Okay. And y'all just have casual conversations?
Yes, sir.
Okay. Did you call him often?
No, I did not.
Why not?
I knew it was wrong and I never knew where he was at, so he always called me.
He's married?
Yes.
All right.
I had a gate opener to get in. But
you were on the phone with Mark Rivera when you drove in?
Yes, sir.
Tell the jury where you went in your truck.
I went up to the third floor to park my truck.
You now know you weren't on the third floor.
Yes.
But you believed you were.
I believed I was.
When you're going home, you always have this equipment in your left hand or left arm, is that right?
Yes, I do.
Okay, so how do you operate the key into the door?
I just put it into the keyhole, turn it left, and then I would open the door handle or pull the door handle down and just push the door open.
All with your right hand?
Yes, sir.
Okay. So you have to put the key in, get it to unlock?
Yes.
And then use the handle?
Yes, sir.
Okay. And all the time you're holding your equipment, is that right?
Yes.
You told us about how you normally open that door. But it didn't happen that way, did it, that day? Okay. I'm going to go through a few things that happened at that door and in that room with you now, okay?
Yes, sir.
Yeah, push. And the one engine step in. Okay. Stand right here. Okay. First of all, when you were walking down that hall, I want you to show the jury how you carried this equipment, okay? All right.
sidewalk, I see that it's cracked open, and at the same time, I'm hearing this moving around. But me putting that key fob into the lock is pushing the door open, and everything's happening all at once.
Okay, let me ask you that. We're breaking this down, but how fast can you tell the jury this is happening?
Less than 2 seconds. The motions of me doing all this is less than 2 seconds. Whenever I fully opened the door, I saw this silhouette figure standing in the back middle apartment by the window.
You're saying figure?
Yes.
Okay. As you were opening, and how did the door get fully open?
I used my left arm to fully open it. And at that time, that's whenever I'm drawing my service weapon.
Thank you.
Around here.
My gun out, and I yelled at him, like, let me see your hands, let me see your hands.
What was the figure doing?
Moving around. Yes, sir.
And the figure was moving around as you described?
Yes, I have my gun pointed, and I'm saying, let me see your hands, let me see your hands.
What were you focused on?
Him.
Just him?
Yes.
And then he began coming towards you?
Yes.
And as he came coming for you, that's when you heard him speak?
Yes.
Okay, I'm going to do that now.
And that's at that point whenever I shot.
Somewhere in this area?
Yes.
When you shot, what happened?
He fell.
Go ahead and tell us. When you saw him coming towards you, what was going through your mind?
I thought that he was coming at me. I just couldn't see his hands. He was going to kill me.
Did you hear anything as he was walking towards you?
There was a loud yell. He was yelling, hey, hey, hey.
I was getting close. That's when it started hitting me that this guy, I have no idea who he is. And that's when everything it started to spin. I was confused. And that's when I dialed 911.
Where were you when you started to dial 911?
I was kneeling down next to him.
Do you know what had happened or starting the process what happened when you knelt down next to him?
Yes. I started... I knew I had shot him. I wasn't sure where he was hit on his body. I started doing some compressions with my left hand.
What were you doing with your right hand?
I was on the phone with 911.
Is that when we first heard the 911, when the operator picks up?
Yes, sir.
What was going through your mind with Malcolm John laying there next to you?
That I'd shot an innocent man. He didn't deserve. I was in my apartment.
When you fired that shot, where did you think you were?
Inside my apartment.
Amber. When you pulled your weapon at night and you fired, why did you fire?
Yes, sir.
All right, let me watch it one more time.
Mr. John is lying on a stretcher being carried by paramedics, right?
Yes, sir.
You can see what you've done. Second, he's passed. What do you go do?
I looked at my phone. I didn't want to see his body.
Looks like you're trying to text somebody again, right?
I looked down at my phone. I don't know what I was doing. It's hard.
Do you see your thumbs moving, like you're scrolling around?
Yes, I do.
Around?
I don't know what I'm looking.
Ms. Geiger, you also expressed to the jury that one of the reasons why you deleted all those texts and put them from that particular evening was because you felt ashamed about your relationship with Martin Rivera. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
But starting on September the 8th again, even though with all the texts that you deleted before that, on September the 8th, you're again sending flirtatious messages with him, sexually oriented messages back and forth with Martin Rivera again, and we're talking about getting drunk. Isn't that right?
Yes, sir.
So, I mean, how long does this remorse on your part of this feeling about that what you've been doing is wrong, how long did that last? A day or two?
Lasted every day.
So as this family is thinking about having to bury their son and their brother, 2 days after the event, you are already going back to talking about getting drunk and doing sexual things with Martin Rivera.
Yes, I did.
You didn't express one time that you shot him because he was coming at you.
I did not on the phone.
Sorry?
I did not over the phone.
You did not express one time that he was armed.
I did not.
You didn't say one time that he put you in fear.
I did not.
Also, when officers Blair and Lee arrived and came in, you met them in the hallway.
Yes, I did.
You also told them that you shot a person thinking that this person was in your apartment.
I did tell them that.
You didn't say one time, I thought he was armed, did you?
I did not.
You didn't say one time he was coming at me, did you?
I did not.
And he was still alive, wasn't he?
Yes, he was.
10:03 p.m. and at 10:02 p.m., you sent text messages to Martin Rivera.
Yes, I did.
Text messages that would have required you to have put the phone in a place where you can see it, and you used your fingers to write out the words, I need you, hurry, dot, 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 right?
I don't remember how many hands I used.
But you texted Mr. Rivera using your hands.
Yes, I did.
And as you were doing that, you were unable to give Mr. Jean your full attention, the attention that he deserved.
Yes, I did.
And then you made the choice to do that a second time. Isn't that true?
Yes, sir.
All right, so at both of those times, you put your needs and your wants over his.
I still cared about him.
Did you put your needs and your wants over him when you decided to do that?
No, sir.
All right. And then you went out into the hall. You left him alone.
When I heard the officers coming, I stepped outside.
So you decided to do something other than continue to give Mr. Jean life-saving measures.
I wanted somebody there fast to get him
out.
You're
not going to answer my questions, are you?
Yes, sir, I am.
And so then you said you saw him walking.
Yes.
Or coming towards you.
Yes.
Okay, and then you said that at about here, from here to where you were at the door, that's when you decided to shoot twice.
Yes, sir.
Okay. That's called a double tap, right?
Yes, sir.
Is that what you were intending?
Yes, sir.
That's your training, isn't it?
It's what we're trained to do.
It's training. Double tap maximizes the lethality of your shooting, doesn't it?
Yes, sir.
I mean, it's better than one shot to the heart.
I just did what I was trained to do.
Because you resort to training, right?
Yes, I do.
You rely on your training?
Yes, sir.
It aids you?
Yes, sir.
And in crisis, you resort to your training?
Yes, sir.
So you knew when you were shooting that gun that you were using deadly force against Mr. Jean?
Yes, it was a threat at the time.
Ma'am, will you answer my questions, please?
Yes, sir.
When you shot at Mr. Jean, you knew you were using deadly force against him?
Yes.
You know what a bullet can do, don't you?
Yes, I do.
And when you shot at him twice, you intended to kill him?
Yes, sir.
All right. So all this stuff about it being a sad mistake, at the moment in time when rubber meets the road, when you pulled that trigger, you intended to kill Mr. John.
He was the threat. Yes, sir.
Will you answer my question? when you aimed and pulled the trigger at Mr. Jean, shooting him in center mass exactly where you are trained, you intended to kill Mr. Jean?
I did.
As a police officer, when it really matters, how did you give a loud verbal command?
In an authoritative and clear voice.
You would have said, "Let me see your hand! Let me see your hand!" Right?
It would be a loud voice.
That's
yes.
Right. Not like you showed them earlier today. You would have been almost screaming that at him, wouldn't you?
I didn't scream it.
All right. But you're saying that that happened at the threshold of the door with the door open, right?
Yes, sir.
So you're actually partially in the hallway.
Yes, I guess you can say that.
From the door, you've testified that you could see Mr. Jean doing a side-to-side motion.
Yes, sir.
Okay. And then you testified on this cross-examination that you watched that for, I think you said, 2 or 3 seconds.
Yes, it was, I think it was.
Okay. Right?
Yes, sir.
In that 2 to 3 seconds, let's just watch it. 1, 2, 3. In that 2 to 3 seconds, you could have done that too, couldn't you?
You could have done that as well,
couldn't you have?
Do what?
You could have backed away and let that door shut on its own.
I could have.
You could have done that.
Yes, sir.
You chose not to do that.
No, sir.
Instead, you chose to pull your gun, to level it off, and shoot at Mr. John.
I did do that.
That was your choice.
It was my choice.
Even though you could have backed off at least twice now to a position where you would have been more safe and he would have been alive.
I could have. I don't remember ever sending it, but I did send it.
Okay. And when asked about how you felt about the Southside Flats, your response to him again on August the 21st was, "I'm liking it," right?
I did.
And then you said, "Few homeless here and there, and a lot of hippies smoking weed."
Yes, I did send that.
All right. You didn't say anything in there about the rank crime and the all this other stuff that has caused you to be so concerned, right? Chamberlain, he's a police officer, isn't he?
She is.
She is. I apologize. She's a police officer, right? So to a fellow officer, you're not gonna hold back. Is that right?
I mean, I can't say I would or wouldn't.
Well, that's what you said, though.
I did say that.
Some people smoking weed, but you're liking it. So did you look at the bullet wound?
Yes, I did.
Okay, so you knew he was injured with a bullet, right?
Yes, I did.
And a person bleeds when they're injured with a bullet, correct?
Yes, they do.
Is there a reason why you didn't use this stuff right here, which is designed to control traumatic bleeding?
It never crossed my mind.
It didn't even cross your mind?
No, sir.
Even though he's bleeding in front of you?
No.
And this is inches from you?
Not.
It never crossed your mind to use this?
No, sir.
This is a first aid kit that's also included in there, right?
Yes, sir.
And you've got more of that exact same stuff in here. Hemostat gauze dressing for bleeding control.
Yes, sir.
That's also unopened, isn't it?
Yes, sir.
So, other than, I'm trying to understand this. Other than with just one hand periodically with interruptions doing some compressions, did you really do anything else to try and help Mr. Jean?
The sternum rub.
The volume that you used when we demonstrated, is that the volume you used?
That he used?
That you used?
Yes, sir. It was clear and precise.
You've heard the state's allegation that you're just lying about that you said that.
I did. But I know I said, I know what I did and what I said that night. And I did say, "Let me see your hands, let me see your hands."
Was he sitting on the couch at all?
No, never saw him sitting on the couch.
Was he moving? Was he just standing? What was he doing when you fired the shot?
He was just moving. Advanced towards me whenever I shot the first two shots where he was ended up falling down.
And why did you shoot?
Because I was scared that he was going to come at me and kill me.
That was your reason?
Yes, sir. I was scared, and I thought he was advancing towards me. He had a weapon.
Well, that was her testimony, so... So we've come to the end of the show. She's been found guilty, and we'll just be sitting back waiting to see what she gets. Like I said, I kind of feel sorry for her, but then again, I kind of don't. Because all of this could have been avoided if she would just been paying attention to what she was doing and just backed out, you know. And we wouldn't be talking about it. Call it something else. But anyway, that's it for tonight. I'll be back next Tuesday. The annual report on crime in the country. And while that was playing, I was going through, because what I do is I read the actual stats, and I do divide it by race, because there are people in this country that will have you believe that all the crime committed in this country is done by done by black and brown people. And according to these stats, it is the total opposite. And I'll give you the exact numbers from the FBI next week. So until then, I will see you next week. Peace out.